Hi, and welcome along to Early Excellence's Head to Head podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and in these podcasts, I'll be connecting with real head teachers and school leaders. We'll be discussing hot topics in primary and early years education and sharing some real experiences. So keep listening to hear more about school inspections and impactful school improvement strategies. Hi there, thanks for joining me for this month's Head to Head podcast. I hope that you're all well. Today I'm catching up with my colleague Phil Armstrong, Senior Education Lead here at Early Excellence. It's nice to see you, Phil.
Really good to see you too.
Oh, we're all smiley today. We've not long had our Easter break, so, I think you're having an Easter break imminently, aren't you?
It's coming up, yeah, coming up.
So, in terms of us having a conversation today, I think lots of our listeners may well know you from your school improvement work and consultancy work that you do in the South, the vastness of the South, where I think you work from Reading to where? How far do you spread?
It's just kind of Cornwall to Kent. Is kind of the area, yeah.
A big one. And then, of course, you do your international as well. So some people might know you from that. So you've recently come back from Thailand not so long ago and are soon jetting off to Milan, I hear.
Yeah, it's been really, really interesting. Yeah, Thailand was a fascinating experience. Well, to go back to Thailand and to work with teams there was obviously a great privilege and really interesting to see the different ways that those schools work. And then we've got an event coming up in Brussels in June, which Nova from our team is joining me over in Brussels at the British School at Brussels there. And then Milan as well. So it's interesting that kind of Europe is reconnecting with us.
Yeah, exciting. And of course, I know lots and lots of people will know you from our school senior leader briefings and possibly from our subject leadership programme as well. Or maybe some of these podcasts, because this isn't our first rodeo, is it? We've done a couple of podcasts together, you and I. So your schedule's pretty busy, like it would be fair to say. But in addition to that, you're also at university, aren't you?
I am, yes. I stepped back through the kind of the doors of university, gosh, over 2 years ago now, and at Reading University. So actually it's very convenient. It's across the road pretty much from where I live. So I haven't had to travel too far.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for today, actually, that's what we're going to be talking about. So we're not talking about necessarily your international work or what you're finding out when you're doing school improvement work, which is sometimes the things that you and I discuss. Actually, we're going to delve into something that you're doing for yourself, really, and the research that you're doing and the focus that you're taking and actually the things that you're finding out, which I think will be really useful because, of course, it does link to education, funnily enough, because that's the arena that we're in. So where's a good place to start? I guess it was why you decided to take that step back in, as you say, back into the classroom yourself, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I'd explored quite a long time ago. So even when I was finishing my BA Ed a long time ago, I'd always thought about further study at that time and had even got part of the way through possibly starting a doctorate. But then the funding opportunities and things, obviously, sadly, they diminished at that kind of time. So I started my teaching career. And all the way kind of through that, that's kind of the back of my mind, something was kind of niggling away to, you know, kind of keep on kind of reading, keep on researching. So my role before I joined Early Excellence, working at the Ampleside Centre here in Reading, I took on a master's in education, in education leadership through the Open University, which was a really interesting experience, totally online. Kind of. And when I completed that, again, there was this kind of what next, what next, what next? And shortly after completing that, I joined Early Excellence, which is coming up for, 8 years ago now. And I remember talking at the time with the team saying, oh, this is something I might at some point want to do. But obviously starting a new job, joining a new team, it was just like not the right time. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, a friend of mine started doing the educational doctorate at Reading. And as part of their course, I took part and I was interviewed for one of their assignments that they were doing. And I've just found the whole thing really, really interesting. And they basically almost badgered me into considering it and thinking about, you know, is this something right for me, something to explore as part of the next steps of my career? So I started finding out a bit more information and how the kind of course runs and what the kind of requirements were. And then obviously had conversations with Liz about, you know, moving forward and what to do next. It was great to kind of have that support. And so, yeah, it was just the timing kind of felt right, I suppose. But also the way that the course is structured, the educational doctorate is that you need to be working in education. It's a very kind of, I suppose it's very much linked to your role. Whatever it is you're looking to research is something that you feel is going to be beneficial to your role or others working in a similar role to yourself. And I really liked that idea, that kind of practical application theory as well. So it was a bit of a nervy beginning, that kind of filling in the forms and putting down some ideas and proposals and sort of tentatively shaping a sort of a thesis idea. But as soon as I had the first conversation with the course director, I kind of knew this was the right thing to do. And yeah, it was a big step, but it felt the right step to take.
Oh, super. And I know obviously kind of we're working together, so I hear snippets of, oh, I've got uni this weekend, or I've got an assignment due, or I'm looking at this. But it's all going well so far because you're 2 years in now, aren't you?
Yeah, 2 years in. So the first two, it's a five-year kind of programme, which is designed to be roughly about 5 years. It can be slightly longer depending on how your thesis is going. But the first 2 years are quite structured. So we had three residential weekends, which is in Reading, so it's great. It's very residential for me. But we had people attending from Scotland, from north of England, people kind of travelling all over the place. I know from other cohorts they've had people from travelling in from overseas as well. And I remember the very first session was in February. It was just after we started coming out of lockdowns, and we all sat there in a very windows open, you know, letting the air ventilate, all those sorts of things. It was really interesting discovering all the different people on the course and their different roles. So some people working in education related to health, some working education related to business, some working within higher education. So quite a diverse range of people and a small group, and we've become very, very close. But yeah, the first 2 years, very structured, with assignments to do, looking at aspects of theory of education, education leadership, looking at different approaches to methodology of research. So lots of different components that are gradually kind of layered up. So you've done lots of revisiting of aspects to basically help you think about what your bigger long-term thesis is going to be. And then when you complete those 2 years, and if you pass the kind of assignments thing successfully, then you go on to what we've just embarked on now, which is the kind of the thesis part, I suppose, really, which is now, sadly, we don't meet face-to-face with colleagues anymore. We're now meeting with our supervisors. So I've had a couple of meetings now with my supervisors, which have been really brilliant, very challenging but inspiring at the same time. And they kind of guide you and support you through the process and make you question what you're doing, but also set goals that are related to your particular thesis to keep you on track, really. But what has been really interesting and very evident, I guess, all the way through is the way the course is designed is that recognition of that everybody is working full time. So it's the support. There's a lot of support, a lot of guidance to make sure that people can be as successful process as possible.
So you're not going it alone now, but actually you are, it's because you're working with your supervisors, as you say, but actually it's much more you taking the lead now and really digging into the research part of your thesis and the focus. So what are you allowed to share? What's the focus? What line of inquiry are you currently looking at? Because I guess over time it might evolve a little bit.
And it certainly has done. And it kind of goes backwards and forwards. It's kind of this continuum of evolution of a kind of thesis design. But what I was always particularly interested in is kind of school leaders and how to support them more effectively in their role when it comes to the early years parts of their school. And I think that links into a lot what both of us do a lot in our day-to-day kind of lives, really. And the conversations that I'd had with head teachers who had not had that early years background, and how to really more effectively support them, and recognizing that you couldn't sort of push all your early years kind of knowledge into this person, but you wanted them to help them be the best person they could be in that particular role. So that's where things have led to at the moment. And that kind of really looking at what head teachers' perceptions are of their early years, what, how they see their role in terms of supporting that. Often in lots of schools that we work with, you'll see a very distributed leadership model where you'll have, you know, the early years lead and the head teacher as delegated responsibility to some amazing early years leaders. But even so, that head teacher ultimately has that responsibility over the school. And how can they support their early years leader, but perhaps also challenge the early years leader as well? So that's where we're kind of heading at the moment. But through that kind of initial 2-year process, exploring ideas around sort of professionalism and professional identity, how that relates to people working in the early years, particularly. There's obviously also gender issues come up as well, how traditionally, you know, the workforce within the early years sector is massively, in terms of percentage, is female. Has that got some relation to school leadership? All these sorts of issues start to bubble up. And as one of my supervisors says, the challenge with any kind of thesis is you can go off track very, very quickly. As she said, don't be attracted by the shiny things. You need to be keeping on what it is you really want to look at. And it's honing that down. So that's kind of where we're at the moment. And as part of that process is lots of reading around what have other people done in relation to this. And what's been interesting is there hasn't been a great deal done, particularly about early years. There's some amazing things out there looking at head teachers' kind of thoughts around play, and particularly the use of play beyond reception, for example. I know Julie Fisher, for example, we work a lot with Julie, published a really interesting paper recently about head teacher perceptions of play and the use of kind of play as part of pedagogical practice within Key Stage 1. But when it comes to a head and their early years, there seems to be a little bit of a gap, particularly in this country. So that's where we're headed, I think.
Interesting. I may well be about to get attracted to those shiny things, though, in terms of professional identity as a thread, just to unpick a little bit more. I think that's really interesting and kind of interesting to reflect on, because if I think of that for myself, for a very long time I was Sarah the teacher, or as it was back then, Miss Price the teacher, and that was almost what defined me and how I really saw myself. And it's funny how, for me, I've been reflecting on that. I knew this podcast was coming, and we've had a few conversations about professional identity. But I've reflected on how my identity has kind of changed, almost because of some of the opportunities that I've been given through my career, that actually a door might have opened or closed, or a particular avenue has opened up that I've kind of tested the water with and gone along. And as a consequence of that, and the people that have been around me, that has very much shaped where my journey went and the professional identity and how that grew and evolved. I think it's really interesting because it's not necessarily something that we stop and think about a lot.
No, and it's how it evolves and how it shapes. And there's lots of research around kind of influential people and how those kind of shape who we become, and how in some ways we kind of pick up or mirror behaviours because of these people that kind of influenced us. But what was interesting, we're looking at some work around people who have a very passionate early years kind of thread through them, and the commonalities in their identity, and how identity and professionalism are very much intertwined when it comes to thinking about anyone working early years, and how you're perceived, what your ethics are, and that kind of advocacy that often people have in terms of the early years, and are really championing it, really shouting about it. Maybe they feel they need to shout more, perhaps sometimes. And there again is some evidence around how the sector as a whole generally feels undervalued, and as a consequence of that, often feels it has to have shout even louder, perhaps, than other educational strands. So yeah, that whole identity is fascinating. How people will see you as a teacher, even when you're not in the school. And I from personal experience, because lots of people know my background is actually health. And still to this day, some people still think I'm the nurse. That identity has not gone, even though they know I've been in education for over 20 something years, probably 25 years. And I'm trying to think of it. Yes, 25 years. But people who still see me as the nurse, and they'll come to me with medical related stuff, the way they have a conversation with me is very, very different. And it's how we think our identity is something we create, but it's also the identity that people place upon us as well. I found really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just reflecting on those people that kind of influence you, I know when I first went into teaching, I kind of was quite interested in year one, and I'd applied for my first post, and there was a couple of posts at the school, and I kind of, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound, and said yes, I'm open to suggestions, and actually was appointed to the early years post. Actually, I've never looked back, although I have taught outside of early years, I've never looked back. But one of my experiences, I was moved to nursery, which actually a lot of people around me and some of the parents are like, oh dear, you've been moved down the school. There was some conversations around that. But actually I worked with nursery nurses in that instance, and they very much helped shape who I became as an early years teacher. But certainly initially lots of the parents were gravitating towards the nursery nurses rather than me as the teacher, because they felt that actually the nursery nurses were more caring, understood their children much more than the teacher in terms of how they came across. And that was really interesting to kind of stand back and see happening in terms of how those parents were perceiving and what they thought their children needed. And actually they wanted that. I was very loving and nurturing, but they didn't know me in that way, if that makes sense. Whereas the nursery nurses, they kind of gravitated towards. So even that I felt was part of shaping me in terms of really, really comprehending the importance of engaging with parents as well. So not just the professionals that we're working with, but actually our parents too. And thinking as well, I was reflecting on how we, you, I, and the people we work with and people in schools, how we're actually inadvertently influencing other people's professional identity, aren't we? We are those influences potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is, particularly when thinking about some of the work with early years leaders, for example, there was some interesting research looking at the particular skill sets that early years leaders in schools have, and how perhaps schools aren't fully utilising those talents that people have. And one of those was actually working parents, and how obviously when you're the parents of the children first joining the school, the person they build the relationship first with are the early years colleagues, and how if that child then stays on the way to school, that relationship is still there, and are schools kind of capitalizing on that? But also that ability to work in larger teams, the ability to be flexible in pedagogy, all those sorts of things. And it was the kind of conclusions were that schools need to draw more at that well, really, of, you know, this is what early years can. We may not, you know, have that curriculum content knowledge, which is very specific to a particular age group, but actually the approach to education, the relationships with parents, all those sorts of things, maybe there were some untapped seams there that people could really draw on. But certainly that perception about if you're working in early years, you're not as well qualified, you are perhaps, you know, you're not a proper teacher, all these sorts of things that I'm sure there are many people listening will have experienced. And that's, again, when we look at kind of head teacher role and how many of them have not perhaps had that earliest background, you start to then to think, well, is there a reason why? What's the issue here? Because the other group that are particularly interesting are those head teachers who did start in the early years and have become head teachers. And were there some barriers and things? And that's one of the things that I'm hoping through the study to do is looking at head teachers, and then start to look for patterns. So are the head teachers, for example, who've had an earlier background, do they see things differently to those that did not? Do people see things differently because of gender? Do you think people see things differently because of, you know, who they're working with? You know, what is it that's influencing and shaping that? Back to that idea about influential people. But ultimately, if we want to help our head teachers be the best that they can be for every child in their school, what is it we can do to support them, particularly given the expansion of early years provision in schools, and more and more schools having 2-year-olds and so on? You know, that journey in that school begins potentially at 2. So the head needs to be as engaged with that as they do with year 6.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Often, and you will, I'm sure, have come across this as I have in terms of head saying, well, I don't know as much about early years, or I've not taught in early years, but I want to know, or I recognise that it's important. And it's about how much in that role you do need to know in terms of, it's not actually every little bit of granular detail, but it is about knowing about early years as you would other aspects of your school. But I do feel as an early years person who went on to become a head teacher, I do feel that those experiences in early years helped me to better understand, because I've been there and done that. And I'm a big believer in actually we should teach in different year groups. I have to say I haven't taught in year 6, but I do sometimes look back and think maybe at some point I should have had that experience, because I'm almost the opposite extreme of a head who really understands early years and the infant phase. yes, I've got that subject and curriculum knowledge, and yes, I understand kind of leadership and teaching and learning, but I haven't got those experiences to draw upon in terms of teaching in the upper key stage too. So it would almost be the opposite for me, I guess, than what you're looking at, I suppose.
Yeah, there's another thesis, I suppose, really, isn't it? It's when I remember having a conversation with somebody at the university, and what kind of, because one of the things that's interesting when you start this process, it's not a final process. So they're always talking about, what will you do next, for example? So once you've completed it, what do you want to look at next? Where will you go with it? What's the kind of next route? And one of the things we started a conversation with was actually around subject leaders, and that kind of wide kind of conversation about subject leaders' perceptions of early years and how that joins into the subject. Again, really interesting, because we do a lot of work with subject leaders, for whom many early years is not their natural territory at all. Links in this particular educational theorist called Bourdieu, that anybody who's done kind of any masters or any kind of other kind of stuff around education probably very familiar with his work. But one of the things he talks about is this idea of kind of habitus, about how you become this person, how you behave in a particular way, or learn sort of behaviors, really. But also this concept of field, like an environment of a place of work or a particular setting, wherever you may be, and how you learn the rules of the game, I suppose, really, how to behave in those places. And this is what always interests me, the idea of people being a bit like fish out of water. And it's what happens when you have to go in and you have to observe and you have to try and understand, and you have to interpret, and how uncomfortable that can make people feel if it's not a space that they understand the rules and understand the vocabulary. I know we do lots, don't we, as a team, helping people unpick the vocabulary of early years, and how complex and how confusing it can be sometimes for people. So it's all, for me, the more I think we can help unlock the mystery of early years, the better. And I always put my hand up and say, I was as guilty as the next person. You know me, I love my kind of rivers and islands and all those kind of things, but I used to love my little early years island, to pull the drawbridge up and send everyone else away and say, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, leave me alone. But actually, it wasn't really the right approach in hindsight. I should have welcomed them. And I should say, come on, have a look, come and see. Was those people a part of that child's journey in terms of education? And the more we demystify, I think the more we strengthen our relationship with education as a whole. And my worry is that there's increasing separation happening in education, sadly often economically kind of driven. And the fear that kind of, even within the early community itself, the kind of fracturing and the movement away of the preschool community from the school community. And, you know, I just think creating barriers is never a good thing to do when we're thinking about children. And I know, attending various events recently, there was a real fear that this is almost happening beyond our control. We've kind of lost control of it, really. I think we need to take it back and strengthen relationships rather than, you know, fraction, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we've all got that one common denominator, which is the children. That's the important thing, isn't it? And what we're kind of talking about now is really doing all that we can, drawing on the expertise, having those professional discussions, sharing practice. Every day is a school day. We can always learn new things from colleagues and those sorts of things, so that we are pulling in the same direction to achieve as the very best that we can for those children, so that they can achieve the very best that they can. So yeah, I think, there's always lots happening in education, but certainly it's a tricky time at the moment, I think it would be fair to say.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think there's that anxiety around, you know, one phase influencing the other. I think that's a common thing that people worry about, that kind of pushing down in. But I have to say, and I know you see it as well, is that incredibly inspiring practice taking place where people are rethinking Key Stage One, for example, and being really successful in it, and incredible stuff that's taking place, and more and more. And I also was seeing more and more research coming out related to that, which I think is a great indicator that more of it is happening. It's never easy, but some really passionate teachers about supporting that change, which again is, for me, is a particularly powerful kind of thing to hang on to. But some amazing practice taking place there. And I know we're constantly being asked, aren't we, places to go, people to recommend, things that are going on. People really do know they want to change. And the barriers, sometimes we create our own barriers rather than the barriers that are real there. And yeah, it's, I think there's a lot of really good stuff happening there at the moment. And I always take my hat off to anybody who's doing something a little bit different. And they're doing it because it's right for their children. And I was really struck the other day visiting a school in Bristol where they've changed their practice in Key Stage 1. And it was one support staff who actually said to me, this is right for these children. And she'd been there for a really long time. Probably was not one of the people who was most open to change in terms of changing the way you're going to work in that environment. But she was had become a really powerful advocate for it, which was great. Really.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's that's making those changes, taking those steps away from potentially what is perceived to be the norm, or actually things are already working pretty well. Do we need to make those changes? Is it broken? And if this isn't broken, don't fix it sort of thing. But actually, it's the almost the even better if. And I know I was doing a conference a couple of weeks ago talking to Key Stage 1 and pre-prep and actually really having that actually children are doing well. But could it be even better? Have we considered? But again, that's about making informed decisions based on research, based on kind of professional conversations, based on what we know about child development. So again, and this kind of threads back through to the people that are going to support and kind of push those developments and actually kind of say, yes, this is the direction we're going in, need to have that bigger understanding, don't they? See that bigger picture and have that kind of knowledge of actually this, have that confidence to say this is going to work because the research says and this is happening and we've explored this and we've found out this. But big steps to take. But I suppose again that takes us back to what we're saying about the people who are really leading those developments and kind of bringing everybody along need to have that overview of informed information, really. So that takes us, I suppose, a little bit to your research. So in terms of your 2 years in, you've had all of that kind of experience of kind of looking at research and reflecting on things. So how's your research going? What's that looking like? What form is it taking? Lots of reading. I know you love reading anyway, which is kind of partly why you're our senior education lead here at Early Excellence, because you love reading, you love researching, you love finding out. So very much up your street. But in terms of for your doctorate, actually, how's it looking? What are you exploring?
Yeah. So at the moment, it's a lot of kind of rereading. So we had to do an assignment last year, which is almost like a mini version of the thesis without doing the thesis. So as part of any kind of process, you do quite an extensive literature review. So you're looking to see, has any research been done similar to the field you're exploring or the themes that you're exploring, to try and unpick what sort of the core messages are from that? What are people's findings? Is it kind of resonating with what you're interested in? And it's, for me, that's been a really interesting process, actually just learning how to do it really well, because it is a real kind of skill. And what is brilliant as part of the program, you get support from the university library, you know, time with the librarians who are just incredibly knowledgeable about, try this, have a look at this, see what this happens. So you're lots of databases, basically, you're trawling through to try and find the information. And what was really interesting is there's obviously lots of research around school leadership. There's lots of research about early years, not necessarily an awful lot bringing it together. And so for me, that was kind of like, oh, okay, this could be interesting, as in, why is there nothing here? Or is this telling me that I shouldn't be going down this particular route? But interestingly, start to come across some international studies that have been looking at what my particular kind of theory or thesis is approaching, is that kind of perceptions of head teachers, their knowledge of early years, what their own training was like. And then looking for patterns in that, and ultimately making some conclusions about, well, what it is, what could we do to help those people who have not got that experience and what impacts that have on them being a head teacher. So at the moment, that's the kind of stage. That's a big part of my work at the moment. So as part of the supervision process, my particular supervisors asked me to regularly submit pieces of text so that they could get feedback on and kind of guide. So it's very much a part of the process, which is really, really great. And they kind of provoke conversation, provoke thinking, I suppose. Like, have you thought about this? Have you tried this? What about this? But also guiding me in terms of the structure, the way that things need to be written in a very particular way. So the kind of the process, I suppose, which is very different to writing, say, for ourselves or for an article, for example. And alongside that, it's also then exploring the particular methodology. So I tend to work in a quite kind of qualitative kind of methodology. I like interviews, I like doing something called thematic analysis, where you basically break down all the kind of elements of an interview and start to identify any common threads and pull those together. But as part of the process, you have to go through ethics approval, basically, to be able to start doing whatever method you're going to do. And to do that, you have to submit a piece of text that's about your methodology and ethics related to that. So they're also, that's my other bit of homework that I'm working on at the moment. So I get homework going to do, really. And we meet at the moment once every 6 weeks or so. So I've got my own, I have lots of notebooks. So lots of, I have like my methodology book. I have this book and this book and this book all kind of on the go at the same time. And meanwhile, keep on reading and reading and reading and reading. And to help hone it down, because the danger is it can go very, very big. Like any research project, I'm really lucky. I get to do all kind of action research projects with some of the multi-academy trusts that we work with and so on. And often people have really big ideas. It's kind of help them keep it small, keep it manageable. And also to make sure, particularly with a doctorate, it needs to be a value. That's one of the key things that it needs to be. Will this help? Will this make a difference? Is it providing something new in terms of knowledge that hasn't been provided before? So that's another kind of thing in the brain you have to keep. Is this right? Is this what I should really be looking at? So that's kind of where I'm at now. And then the idea is that by sort of early autumn, if everything's gone through with ethics and stuff, it's okay, then I start the data gathering process, which potentially will involve lots and lots of other questionnaires, some interviews, lots of interviews as well with head teachers. So anybody who's listening to this podcast or would like to take part, please do get in touch, because I'll be looking for as many people as possible from as many different backgrounds to really give it some validity. And then you go through the writing process. So we have to submit a timeline. And again, it's kind of supervisors really good at kind of helping structure the timeline so that it's manageable, but also realistic. Some people want to do it much more quickly than expected. And it's like, no, remember you are working. You know, I do this in my own time. Is that kind of, how do you make it kind of work effectively?
Oh, well, that was a shameless plug there, Phil, to get some. People out there, if you're in the Early Excellence community, if you're listening to this podcast and you think this would be something you'd like to engage in and you're in that role as a head teacher, then absolutely. I'm almost feeling like I might like to get involved as well.
Yeah. More than
Marion. Super. Great. So actually, obviously it's a huge amount of work to be undertaking alongside what you're doing in your current role, but I can kind of see actually how it would be quite interesting, because you're already immersed in some of these conversations anyway, aren't you, with heads and school leaders in the role that we do. But the outcome, a kind of where you get to at the end, will help hopefully lots of head teachers, school leaders, and be thinking and reflecting on where they're going, but also those kind of people that are building towards school leadership, really reflecting on actually what might help them to be as best placed as possible to undertake that role in their schools and things. So interesting to see how that will fall through. Have you got any kind of conclusions yet in mind? Have you got any threads that you're thinking of where it will go, or is it still far too early?
Still far away. I mean, there's obviously things that people may need around the years, but also thinking about that kind of community element. And we were talking earlier on about kind of influential people, and the concept of kind of notable people is kind of theory. I think it's Steve Kempster, but kind of notable people, people who've changed our practice or made us think, and whether there's some opportunity for head teachers who have got early years for working alongside. I know there are some existing communities like that. And how do we support those more effectively as well? So lots of I'm open-minded at the moment to see where things are going. I think the worry is always with any kind of research project is if you start predicting where it's going to go, you're not on the right path. You've kind of already made the path right the way to the end. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes through. And what's been fascinating through the first 2 years is doing just some very small scale research projects we had to do to kind of practice techniques and so on and develop our skills. Was what surprises came through from interviews. So although people that I've interviewed have all kind of in similar-ish roles, they're very different people. But actually, where some types of really common things start to come through in terms of professional identity, professionalism, how, you know, their relationship with education on the whole, people who've influenced them as well. It's been really, really interesting. And why they've chosen to really focus on careers, what their drives have been. There's been lots of commonalities, but also lots of surprises. So, yeah, you never quite know what someone is going to say.
Great. It sounds really interesting. Well, I think that's been really, it's been really interesting to just listen to actually the process that you're actually going through and your thinking behind that, but also to hear about where you've got to so far and where it might go next. As you say, you can't draw those conclusions because you, anybody who attends our senior leader briefings will know that you always say with research, handle with care. Think about, you know, the research and the scope of that research and the breadth. And actually what you're talking about is very much, this is going to take years. This is going to have a big breadth of reading research. This is going to have a big breadth of research of real people on the ground, real leaders, their experiences from a whole range of kind of settings, backgrounds, experiences. So actually it's going to be quite a broad piece of research in that respect in terms of breadth and depth that you're going to be undertaking. So yes, I shall look forward to hearing how it's moving along. And yes, hopefully reading it when you get there.
Anybody who's considering doing an educational doctorate, I would wholeheartedly encourage them to explore the process. There are lots of ways of doing it at different universities around the country. And I think that it's a challenging process to go through, but also very inspiring, not least for the people that you will meet as part of the course. And it really does make you realise just how much is going on. I think education and research has quite an interesting relationship. In theory, as a kind of strand of kind of broader research, education research is quite new. It's often sitting alongside other bits of research that, you know, the kind of the arts-based research and philosophy and so on. So it's a growing kind of, it's still a toddler compared to other types of research, I suppose. But there's some really amazing stuff out there. And as you said, yeah, always handle with care. But the more I think that people who are involved in the community, in the sector, embark on the process, I think that has to be for the better. So explore further.
Yeah, it's super duper. So before we finish then, I suppose it would be fair to say we should probably just drop your email in case you will get inundated with people who might want to be involved. So it's phil@earlyexcellence.com. If you are interested in engaging with Phil in part of his research, I'm sure he'd be very happy to have a conversation with you. But yes, I would say to you, Phil, good luck with it all. And as I say, we look forward to hearing how it moves forward. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Really great chance to have a chat with you and always good to catch up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Take care and I'll see you soon. Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you found it a valuable listen and that you've taken some things away to reflect on or maybe things that you want to discuss with your colleagues. Of course, remember, if you want to talk about any of the issues that we've explored today or you need support with other matters in your school, then do feel free to drop me an email. Sarah@earlyexcellence.com, or why not get connected with me on LinkedIn or Twitter? Anyway, take care and join me next time for some more genuine head-to-head conversation.